You reach for the top olive oils and invest in the best pans. But in the kitchen, how well do you care for your greatest tool, your hands? When mine take a beating cooking and cleaning, which is often, I use Bag Balm to work its wonders on my poor, distressed skin. Created 125 years ago on a Vermont dairy farm, their soaps smell great and clean hands without stripping moisture, and their fast-absorbing lotion means I can quickly get back to cooking. Treat your hardworking hands to Bag Balm, every chef's best friend. Use code FOOD52 for 20% off your order on bagbalm.com. Good through 2024.
Yo, yo, this is Peter J. Kim on the Food 52 Podcast Network, and this is Counter Jam, the show that celebrates culture through food and music. We're closing out Season 3 strong with an episode featuring two musical superstars from the island of Jamaica, dancehall legend Shaggy and reggae legend Ziggy Marley. They have, 10 Grammy Awards between the two of them. No big deal. What you might not know is that they both also know their way around Jamaican food. Ziggy even has a cookbook under his belt. We'll hear about how Shaggy celebrates Christmas in Jamaica, what makes for a great beef patty, and why Ziggy Marley loves Sunday dinner, and I mean really loves Sunday dinner. This track you're hearing is from Ziggy's 2011 album, Wild and Free. It's one of those songs that continually evolves from one bar to the next, perhaps emulating the kind of change that the lyrics call for. I especially dig when the reggae groove kicks in. Here's Personal Revolution by Ziggy Marley.
Personal revolution. Hey, I don't like the hypocrisy. Is this democracy? There is no voice for me in your philosophy. Tainted theology. Oh, can you save me? Who can save me?
That was Personal Revolution by Ziggy Marley. As you probably know, Ziggy and his father Bob and much of the Marley family is known for songs that call for change. Personal Revolution is no exception, though it calls for a bit of a different kind of change.
That's one of my favorite songs. Just because of that idea, Personal Revolution. Just that alone is like, yeah, that sounds like something.
Yeah.
You know? I came to this theory after thinking about things over years. And one day, it kind of came in my mind, like, the real revolution is really, the real change that is going to really make the big change that everyone wants to see, right? A more just world, more prosperity, more economic equality, more equality. All of these things that we want to see won't happen unless the revolution is within each individual, or as much individual as it takes to make that change.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of theory, and it was just me getting away from the physical struggle and going more into the spiritual and personal struggles of my own life, and taking things not on a level of like what's happening in society, but what's happening inside of you,
yeah.
What's happening inside of me. You know, that is where the battle is. That's where the struggle is. That's where it begins.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it's won and lost. It's not out there, it's in here, you know?
I hear that. And that's actually a reason why that song means so much to me, is because I feel I have a lot of ideals and values, and I also have the way I actually live, and those two things are not always lined up like that. And
true.
When it's not lined up, I feel that dissonance and, you know, like two notes a half tone away from each other playing at the same time. And you're like, oh, yeah. No, I just need to like move things one way or the other, you know?
Moving into slightly more frivolous territory, I kicked off my conversation with Ziggy by talking about the most important meal of the day.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
What made for breakfast this morning? Some feta cheese, I think with some little crackers.
Cheese and crackers, it works. It works.
every day is different, but that was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like breakfast is where you really see people's sort of food identity come through because not everybody wants the same thing for breakfast. You know what I mean? Like, I wake up and I can eat kimchi for breakfast. My wife is French, and like, that's not her thing. You know, she wants like...
I could eat kimchi for breakfast too, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I could, yeah. That's easy, yeah.
But that's not everybody, you know? Some people feel like they need to ease into the day with like a really like gentle breakfast. Me, it's like, go right at it. I'll go straight to the kimchi.
Okay, pause. It's a little surreal that I'm chatting about crackers, cheese, and kimchi with Ziggy Marley, the son of the Bob Marley. I've traveled a fair amount around the world, and I have an anecdotal theory that the prize for the single most beloved musician on the planet is a toss-up between Michael Jackson and Bob Marley. Whether in a Cameroonian village, a bustling nightclub in Cairo, Egypt, a rural town in Romania, in a taxi in Thailand, or on a beach in Colombia, when Bob Marley comes on, heads start bopping. You've probably heard Bob reference a place called Trenchtown in some of his songs. This is a neighborhood originally built around housing projects for the poor in Kingston, Jamaica. It's considered the birthplace of reggae. It's also the birthplace of Ziggy Marley.
Yeah, I was born in Kingston, Jamaica, in Trenchtown. And we moved a lot when I was younger. You know? So Trenchtown was the more impoverished part of Kingston. So yeah. That's where I was born. My father lived there, my mother. 2, 3, 4 years after, we moved to a better situation, a place called Bull Bay, which was closer to the ocean. We used to eat a lot of seafood, so we were closer to the ocean. And I would go down to the ocean as a boy and help the fishermen bring in their boats and see the fishes and stuff like that. And that's my foundation right there.
How old were you when you were living in Trenchtown?
Trenchtown, probably up to 4 or 5 years. And
yeah, so you probably don't have too many memories from that.
But
time.
The thing is that it's the same core of people that moved with us. So it was my father, my mother, and my grand aunt, and some other older ladies. Like, we move like a little community, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
So the food never really changed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The food never changed until you get more money. That's when the food changed, when you get more money.
Right, right, right.
You know, the food start changing. But the food was good, man. That's the original food. The food was good. You know, we used to eat chicken and... I used to eat a lot of eggs. We used to have people bring eggs to the house. We used to have chickens too. And we would, you know... If somebody's birthday, eventually we would kill something. Like there was no, we didn't go to the supermarket we used to kill the animals and, you know, eat the animals, curry goat or whatever, you know? So yeah, it's such a rich way of coming up, you know, seeing all these things like, you know, it's so beautiful.
That's right. It's more like the world is your supermarket, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a different perspective, you know?
Yeah. And who was doing most of the cooking in your household when you were younger?
My grand aunt. She was the... Because my parents would be away most of the time, right? They're touring musicians, you know? So she would cook. But the meals were very simple. And as I said, those days, like, is that nowhere? You open the fridge and you have, like, a choices galore. Oh, look, I can... What am I going to eat? I don't know. This, do I eat that? You know, am I having kimchi for breakfast or am I having crackers and cheese or, well, you know, those days very simple, man. Sometimes it's just bread and butter, just like some, we call it hardwood bread in Jamaica. It's just some hardwood bread and some butter, some tea, good morning and go to school.
That's right.
And then you'll get some free lunch at the school, you know, some patties and some box milk. And then you come home and you might have a nice dinner. But Sundays, was the dinner. It was when you splurge. Sundays you get the rice and the peas and you get the nice chicken, and Sunday was a splurging day.
Oh, yeah. So tell me about Sundays then. Is this like, were there more people who came over to eat together?
Yeah, man. And just a bigger pot and, you know, the smell, you know, like, you know, when Sunday dinner is cooking, you can smell Sunday dinner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, say Sunday. I get some nice things.
So paint a picture for me. What does Sunday dinner look like? I'm so curious.
Sunday dinner, I mean, obviously through the different stages, it look different. So the ones I like draw to most is when them cook outside on the wood stove. You know, they make a wood fire and them cook. You know, the big Dutch pot, and the rice and peas are cook, and the chicken, you know, the chicken kill and skinning, and, you know, all those little things that we are around and we're trying to help do all these little things. And, you know, it just smell good. It just smell good. You know, Sunday smell different than Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. You know?
Yeah.
Sunday's a different smell. You know, so it's just, yummy, you know?
yeah. Probably like, I imagine having the wood fire going, that's got to bring a certain smell to it.
And it cooks. The food tastes different when it cooked on the wood and when from it cooked on the stove. It tastes, I can taste the difference. Like, I know the difference.
Oh, absolutely.
The different flavor.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And just like, what does the table look like when you sit down to eat?
The table, so now, right. So Sunday for we, you know, is a self-serve mostly. So everything going at a big thing in the table, you know, like a big thing of rice and peas and the chicken there. And you can't help yourself. Only on Sundays you can do that. Mondays through Saturdays, here is your food. Here's your food. This is what you get. Sundays, you might can take something, you know?
Was it typically your great aunt who cooked this food then?
Yeah, my great aunt was a cook. And no, she used to have another friend of hers, Miss Collins, another older lady. Them cook, man. Them cook. Cook and cook and cook. And, I remember my great aunt, she used to eat some stuff that we weren't allowed to eat, you know? Like, she used to eat octopus and stuff like that, and we weren't allowed to eat those type of things because of our culture, you know? My parents' culture. Yeah.
Ziggy's referring here to his family's dietary practices. Bob Marley, like many Rastafarians, adhered to certain dietary restrictions, and apparently, octopus was a no-fly zone.
So one day, I was very hungry. We used to stay with her car. We used to stay with her sometimes. And her place was not as modern as our house is. Was not as, you know. So it's a whole different thing with her house. You got to catch the water. It's a whole, it's like real country. Like no running water. No, this is, yeah. So, so one day I was so hungry, man. I was very hungry. And I was like, let me look in the fridge. I was like, boom, I want the fridge. And there was nothing in the fridge. There was an octopus, and there was some bread, some tomato. And I said, all right, I can't eat octopus, so I'm going to eat bread and tomato. And then when I got outside, I saw some sugar, so I put some sugar. Put some sugar. I had a bread and tomato and sugar sandwich. And that was good. That was the only time I ever had that sandwich. The only time.
I mean, I think that can
that's
be pretty
crazy.
Good, honestly.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. So anyway, I had a good upbringing. It was fun. It was fun, man. That's the experiences.
Were there certain dishes that your great aunt made that you particularly loved?
No, well, chicken was our deal, you know. Chicken was a deal. And then since I was like the first boy, I would always get the leg. Me and my brother would get the leg, you know, because that was the most valuable part of the chicken. So they always look out for us, you know, those old ladies. Yeah. Make sure Ziggy get the leg, you know what I mean? So no, the chicken was the deal. Them is a cooked down chicken, you know, them fried, them see the seasoning what we use in Jamaica is where the aroma that's the smell right there, just the seasoning. Scallion, and onion, thyme, pimento, whatever, you know. When that start cook up, you smell that, man. Yeah, that solve everything, you know?
Well, I think it's good to hear that your family had your priorities right. As you might know, in the U.S., chicken breasts are what are considered the most valuable cut, which I find to be really strange, since the leg is definitely the best. I asked Ziggy to tell me about what his family ate around the holidays, and he brought things right back to Sunday.
No, bro, Sundays. It's all about the Sundays, man. It's all about the Sundays, man. I'm telling you that.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Yo, there was no other, like, what? There's no other holidays. It's just Sundays. There's nothing happening. There's no other special dinner, bro. It's Sunday dinner. It's like, that's the special dinner.
Yeah.
No matter, I don't care what holiday you have or who get married or whatever. Nothing beats Sunday dinner.
Hmm. You know, I really can't tell. Do you think Ziggy likes Sunday dinner? Let's turn to my other guest, Shaggy. Like Ziggy, Shaggy also grew up in a poor neighborhood in Kingston.
I was born in a place called Raytown in Kingston. And that is right by the prison, downtown Kingston, near General Penitentiary. The place called, our street called Charlotte Street. And that's where I was born. Because kind of grew up, so, you know. And at a young age, I ended up living from a tenement yard, different tenement yard, because from a single parent family. So my mother was mother and father for me, you know. And then I moved from one yard, which is, you know, I used to live at the jungle at one point. I used to live, Vineyard Town at one time. I used to live Mountain View at one time. I used to live. There's so many different spots that I used to live back in the days, you know. That is poor people life. That's what poor people do, you know. You kind of move around and, you know, if the rent is somewhere else and you can't afford it, you go somewhere else that you can afford it. I mean, so that because of that, we keep moving, you know. And, this was just raised by a mother. Then my mom went to the United States. And I ended up just kind of, you know, living with my grandmother for a while. And then,
if you don't mind me asking, you know, what sort of food did you eat growing up?
See, whatever could be provided. We weren't as privileged as, you know, like, yeah. We can afford certain things. We couldn't afford certain things back then, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, you have a lot of tin food.
Mm-hmm.
You have like bully beef and rice, which is corned beef with white rice. You know, tin mackerel with white rice.
Yeah.
A lot of rice because the rice fully up.
Yeah.
And they have a thing called chicken back, which is the cheaper parts of the chicken.
Does the fact that you grew up, you know, poor, does that shape the way you sort of view food or the way you sort of look at things today?
No, it make me appreciate good food, you know, because with this, we never got it. So I spare no expense on food. If people are at my house, they're eating the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to the butcher to buy steaks. I go for the best cuts. And if I'm doing lamb chops, I'm getting the best cuts. You know, I'm frequent at Whole Foods. You know what I mean? Because I want the best. I never had those. We just eat what we can. No way.
I asked Shaggy what he'd had for breakfast that day.
Well, I had a thing called ackee and sausage, a national dish.
Do you want to know what I had for breakfast?
What's that?
So it's actually a pretty standard breakfast for me, given the neighborhood I'm in. But I got myself a patty. It so happens there's a golden crust between where I drop my kid off to school and come back. Swing by the golden crust, get myself a spicy beef patty. And then I bring it home, though, and I make what I call a PEC.
Okay.
A patty, egg, and cheese.
Oh, wow.
And so... This might be sacrilege, but I'll make an egg. You know what I'm saying? I do like essentially an egg and cheese sandwich, but using the patty as the vessel.
And so is the egg fried with the yolk still intact, or is it a hard fry?
Runny yolk.
Or battered?
Runny yolk. Yeah, runny yolk.
Oh, runny yolk. Ah, yeah. Okay. So runny yolk, egg, and what? Cheese?
Cheese, yeah. And then I had some hot sauce. But yeah, that's okay. It. And I call that my PEC.
So at least you didn't do it in my honor. You just did it on GP, you know.
that's just what I do.
Yeah, practice fee. I got you.
I definitely, I'm an advocate for the patty as a breakfast sandwich platform.
it's a great substitute for it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. It's delicious. I mean, come on. Are you a fan of patties yourself?
I'm a big patty fan. I'm more of a traditional. I mean, Golden Cross is cool too, don't get me wrong, for the American standard that patties.
Right, right.
You know, if you go into Jamaica, nothing beats a tasty patty out of Jamaica for me.
Mm.
You know, I mean, there's juicy beef and there's mothers. Mothers used to make a really, really good one. And it has to be just out the oven.
Yeah.
I'm not too keen on it sitting down for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So wait, you said a tasty patty. Is that a kind of patty in Jamaica?
It's a brand.
Yeah,
a
yeah.
brand of patty. Those are more the originators of it.
Yes.
They were the one that Tasties was like the first that was on the scene and making patties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was, you know, a little mom and pops one, but as far as a big chain store that made patties in Jamaica, Tasty was that
yeah.
first that really did all of that and the most popular.
So what makes for a great patty then?
I think the beef is one, you know. Some people like to substitute mm-hmm. it and put like, some people put breadcrumbs with the beef, you know, to get a little bit more body yeah, and yeah. thing, and some people just kind of just, you know, from your cooking is getting the beef and the spices, of course, you know, the pepper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the thing with me, you know, at this age, every time I have a patty, it gives me a heartburn. And that's the first sign to say, that shows you that this is not really healthy for you. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
but
right.
You kind of do it and then have the Pepto-Bismol right beside already. Because at this rate, you know, at this stage, it's cultural.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I know it ain't good for me, but, you know, I'm not Jamaican unless I do this.
There you go.
So I know you regulate what you have when you have it. You know, you have a beef patty, but I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, maybe I don't have one a day or three a day. You know what I mean? It can probably,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
you know, twice a month or something like that. And for me, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. A Jamaican without a patty is like a bird without its song.
I know. I think based on my patty consumption, I'm getting less and less Jamaican these days.
Okay. and then what about the crust? I mean, I feel like in my sort of amateur level of experience with patties, I feel like the more a patty falls apart in my hand, the better it is. But I don't know if that's how you feel about it.
Some people like that. I don't. I prefer, you know, the crust, you know what I mean? Because the crust is the crust, but there's ways to do it to where it's not so flaky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like going in your car and then, you know, there's patty crust all over the seats and all that. I mean, you know, I'm not that guy, man. You know what I mean? There's ways to do it to where the crust stay together. But the crust is a big, big part of it. And it's also probably the most unhealthy part, you know, but it's also really tasty.
What do you think of as being other iconic dishes in Jamaican cuisine?
The oxtail is oxtail butter beans. The thing about the oxtail is it's such a tender part of the meat because it's the tail of the cow, you know, and which yeah. makes it expensive also because the tail is a really small part of the cow, you know, it's a big cow. But the meat
yeah,
around
yeah, yeah.
it is so tender, and
yeah,
and when cooked down properly and seasoned right, and you know, if you don't use a pressure cooker, especially, you know, it's really good. Mm. You know, there's a lot of people I know who don't just make it cook down naturally and don't use a pressure cooker and still come out tender. Curry goat is always another big one, and you always have your curry goat and a white rice, you know, instead of rice and peas. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's mostly some people like rice, happy, but if you are true Jamaican with a curry goat, it's a curry goat white rice.
I had no idea. So if I went to yeah. Jamaica and ordered curry goat and got rice and peas with it, people would give me the stink eye.
I mean, no, they'll give it to you, you know, because some people do it. But if you're looking at the traditional way of Jamaica consume curry goat is with white rice with a country pepper on the side, a country scotch bonnet on the side. Yeah, you can cut a piece of avocado or pear, as we call it, and put it on the side, and yeah, it's perfect.
Wait, you take a whole scotch bonnet on the side?
Yeah, just put it on the side, and then you just cut it. Once you cut it, on the side, you can bust it open with your fork, and as you eat the curry goat, uh-huh. you use it and just dab it. Just dab.
Ah,
dab,
I see.
As you eat, you dab it, yeah.
And you're meant to eat the entire scotch bonnet?
You don't have to. If you love pepper like that, you can.
Yeah.
You can dab it because the scotch bonnet is pretty flavorful, but also hot.
Oh yeah.
So, but if you cut it open and have the stem and just dab it while you're eating,
yeah,
you know, what I mean, you get a nice flavor with it. See?
Yeah. I have to say, I think one of the things I truly love about Jamaican cuisine is that Scotch bonnet is in so many places, and I just love the flavor of Scotch bonnets. It's just that they're like so punishingly hot that, like, you know, and I'm, you know, I like spicy food, but even for me, like, Scotch bonnet kick my ass.
You know, for me, I don't find Scotch bonnet to be a very hot pepper.
Okay.
I find it to be a very flavorful pepper.
Yeah.
It has a flavor more so than a heat. There's a heat to it.
Yeah.
But not that turn you off heat, like, oh my God, I'm just tasting pepper.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a flavor. I get my Scotch bonnet from an old couple not very far from here that a friend of mine, Youssef Wallace, go over there and get it for me and carry it home. You know what I mean? And it's their fresh bag. I got a fresh bag yesterday.
Oh, you
know,
wow.
Just picking them little harvest and just eat them, you know? Yeah.
And you're just eating them like potato chips, the Scotch bonnets.
Well, no, I don't eat them just like that. No. But they're not, to me, they're not cringingly hot.
Do not listen to Shaggy. The Scotch bonnet is related to the habanero, and it is one hell of a spicy pepper. Consider that the jalapeno has a spiciness rating of between 2,500 to 8,000 Scoville units. The Scotch bonnet goes all the way up to 350,000 Scoville units. It's no joke. I think it's worth pausing here and remarking on the sheer diversity of Jamaican cuisine, especially given the fact that it's a country of only 3 million people, about the same size as the state of Connecticut. Jamaica, like many other Caribbean countries, contains layers upon layers of cultures, almost like geological rock layers. This shows up in the food. Indigenous cultures set the foundation with ingredients used in Jamaican cuisine, such as the Scotch bonnet and pimento spice, otherwise known as allspice. Colonizers from Spain and Britain brought dishes like the vinegary fish escovitch. Enslaved Africans brought stewed greens, jerk, and the all-important ackee fruit. Chinese and Indian laborers and indentured servants brought rotis, curry goat, and chow mein. The next time you're at a Jamaican restaurant, look at the menu as a living historical record of Jamaica's multicultural history. We're going to play another track here, and it's a live one from Ziggy. If you've only ever listened to studio-recorded reggae albums, you're missing out. The fire, vibrancy, and soul of reggae come shining through in live performances in ways that are simply lost in the studio. If you need to start somewhere, try listening to Bob Marley's Live at the Roxy album. It's one of my favorite all-time reggae records. I suspect you're going to recognize this tune. Here's Ziggy Marley performing live one of his father's classics.
Is this love, is this love, is this love, love that I'm feeling? Is this love, is this love, is this love, is this love that I'm feeling?
Next, how Shaggy does Christmas in Jamaica and the food that put the root in roots rock reggae after this.
At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
We haven't talked yet about what many consider to be Jamaica's national dish, ackee and saltfish. And in case you're not familiar with it, here's how Shaggy describes it.
Well, ackee is a fruit. Most people, when it is cooked and see it on the table, they think it's egg because it has that has the look of that, but it's not. It's actually a fruit. It's our national dish. And the codfish, you know, comes from Newfoundland up in Canada. And it's dried, cured codfish. And once you boil, you take the codfish, though, and you boil it because it's so salty because it's cured. And you literally boil it. Sometimes it takes, depending on how salt it is, it might take two boilings, you know. And I like to boil it till it's fresh, and then I add my salt to it, more so than still keep it so salt. And then you break it up, right? You also boil the ackee. You got to take the seed out, and there's a little red thing inside of it that is poisonous also. So you have to take that out and clean. So you clean your ackee. And once you have it all clean and everything, then you put it in the boiling water.
So this is a breakfast that is pretty universal across Jamaica.
That's a big deal for us, you know. Most Jamaicans do. You know, I'm sure you have a few Jamaicans that don't, but most Jamaicans I know consume a lot of ackee and saltfish.
I'd rate ackee and saltfish up there as one of those magical combinations that just seems to work. Like seaweed and rice, baguettes and butter, cookies and milk, tomatoes and olive oil. The ackee provides creaminess. The saltfish gives you, well, saltiness and fishiness, obviously, and it's packed with umami. But I wanted to zoom in on one thing Shaggy said. Ackee can be poisonous if you don't know what you're doing, as Ziggy further explained.
And the ackee is it's a fruit. You know, it's a fruit. And it's poisonous unless it opens by itself, so you can't force it. You can't, like, it's not like you can't, you know, you can't pick an apple green and make it ripe. You can't do that with ackee. It's got to open up on the tree. Otherwise, it's poisonous. And so, you have to wait till it's seasonal, you know. And I don't know where else I see that. I haven't seen anything like that anywhere else. I haven't seen anything like that anywhere else. So it's unique. For me, it's a very unique experience to Jamaica in terms of getting it from the tree. You know, here you can buy it in a tin, but it's a Jamaican thing. That connect me straight to Jamaica.
And so you would collect your own ackee from the tree?
Yeah, man. Ackee tree.
Is it a really high tree? Is it hard to get to
I mean, you have different sides, but it's easy. Take it with a stick to or something. It's easy. You still can't climb it.
And is there any other way that you eat ackee other than with saltfish? That's the only way I've ever eaten ackee.
No, man, you have the Ital man. No saltfish.
Yeah.
Well seasoned.
Right.
The Ital, now we have Ital in Jamaica where they don't eat any fish or meat. All right? They're vegetarians, basically. But they still utilize, you know, the Jamaican style, but just without the animal product in it.
The Ital diet is quite central to Jamaican culture. It's generally associated with Rastafarianism, and in its strictest form, it eschews any animal products, artificial additives, and added salt. Though it's not uncommon for some adherents of the Ital diet to apply things more loosely.
That was a part of our upbringing too. Eventually, stop eating meat and just eating fish. And, trying to just eat more healthy, I guess, in modern terms, yeah.
Yeah. So that's right. So you adhere to an Ital diet or Ital way of eating when you were younger then?
Yeah, I mean, we still do it. I mean, but I feel like we're more, it's not like something that you can't not say, all right, you know, today I'm not doing it this way, I'm doing it. You know, it's a long-term thing. It's not like a quick thing. So it's like, if I can't do it for most of my life, it's good, but I don't have to do it for all of my life. I can't cheat, I can't cheat here and there. And you know what I'm saying? So. Yeah. It's just a balance. It's just balancing everything so that you don't harm yourself, but you still enjoy yourself. You know, you can't live and not enjoy life, right? So it's balancing. You know.
Yeah, I'd actually love for you to speak a little more to Ital and what it means to you. So, like, what are the main principles for you?
Well, the main principle, really. So, all right. So, if we eat the food as close to as nature intended it to be, so whether it be raw. Whether it be raw or not as cooked or not as a lot of salt.
I mean, to me, like, the best example of where something like that shines is fruit. I mean, I am obsessed with fruits. And the way I think about fruit is that fruit has evolved over really millions of years to be as delicious as possible because it needs to draw animals to spread the seeds.
Okay.
And so
okay,
I think of, okay, in the case of fruit, Mother Nature is the chef and has perfected this recipe for the fruit over millions of years, which is why fruits are one of the things on the planet, really the only things on the planet that you can just take off the tree, eat it, and you like is actually the best way to enjoy that fruit, right? It's perfect how it is, right? To me, fruit is like, for like taste buds, like what flowers are for eyes, right? It's just you know, pure, it's just perfection.
It's funny, when I was a young boy in Jamaica, I used to eat orange and a banana at the same time. I used to like that flavor. I used to eat at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. I think you just invented the smoothie ahead of its time. Were there any other fruits that are particularly good in Jamaica?
No, all of the fruits seem good in Jamaica. I don't like all of them, but all of them good. You have one named Kneesberry that I didn't like. It's called Kneesberry.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a weird looking fruit with some, and then the inside kind is white and it kind of squishy mushy, but I never like it.
If you're trying to sell me a fruit and you describe it as squishy mushy, I would not be very attracted to it. So,
but then you have the one called soursop. We love the soursop.
Oh.
Soursop, nice, isn't
it? That's like a top five fruit for me, the soursop. Oh, creamy,
soursop,
just tart, sweet, delicious.
Man.
Oh, soursop.
Yeah, so interesting, yeah.
Well, actually, that brings me to drinks in Jamaican culture. So I actually associate Jamaican menus with lots of different kinds of drinks. You always see all kinds of options there.
Yeah, man, we have some fabulous drinks, but our drinks is not like from a bar. It's not a bar drink, right? So it's a drink that the people concoct.
Right.
And we used to have some juice, man.
That's right.
But traditionally, we do sorrel. Sorrel is at Christmas time today. They do a sorrel. What do you call it in a Spanish? They have a name for it in a Spanish, too.
Agua de Jamaica.
Right? Yeah.
Flor de Jamaica,
Yeah. So we do that. That's a traditional thing that I've always seen them do. The Jamaican culture. It's very conscious of virility and, you know, strength and stamina and manhood. And so we have all these type of drinks that is based around keeping our manhood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Irish moss with some guineas and thing and it mixed up on some milk and, that would make you keep you strong, you know. So, you know, so it's that type of drinks you'll find. Roots. We boil our own roots and... You know, you have the roots, man, and him sell you his roots, and the roots, you know, make you stand up strong. Yes, son.
Ziggy was being tactful about this for the interview, but he was referencing the fact that a lot of Jamaican drinks are marketed as sexual performance boosters. One such drink has an unusual ingredient. Yeah, I used to think, I think the first time I had sea moss, I remember thinking, well, it's so interesting. Irish moss, that was just so interesting to think of there being moss in a drink. It's not normally something you associate with a drink.
No, but the funny thing is, we used to have it in Jamaica, right? And at one point it was really expensive, more expensive than herb, you know what I'm saying? So it was per pound, like. And then after a while I started seeing it in bags in America. I'm like, what is this? They've got Irish moss in bags now. So a lot of the native things that we are native cultures around the world that use these natural things, the West get hips to it kind of afterwards. We were just doing it. We didn't even know the science of it or anything. It's just something that we ate or something that we drank. We didn't know what it meant. It's just a part of our culture.
Yeah.
And then later you find, you know, once it reached to the first world or whatever. And they figure out, it can do this, and you see all this writing on it. It's kind of funny to me to see that, you know? Like, oh, look, Irish mash is in a bag now. Ha ha ha.
Made it into Whole Foods.
Kind of funny, you know?
Yeah. And well, it's bad when it actually makes the food expensive or rare in the country from which it came.
Yeah, yeah.
But it sounds like that might have been the case.
I couldn't help but ask Ziggy about what his dad liked eating. In his response, he uses the term ground foods, which means foods that come out of the ground.
No, I mean the same yam, the same ground food, because he's from the country where that's what they grow there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where I get that love for that food from. Maybe it's from him. But the ground food, you know, the yam, the roast yam, and a lot of those drinks I was just talking about. They used to make all of those type of drinks with peanuts, oatmeal.
Mm.
Yeah, and they would try to give it to me, and I was like, no. And I said, drink.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, the fact that you're telling me this gives me a whole new perspective on the term roots rock reggae.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about the roots and the ground food in particular.
Ah, I like that.
Turning to the topic of music, arguably the most popular style of music in Jamaica right now is dancehall. It's a little hard to define, and you'll find an immense amount of variation from one song to another. Shaggy, who is one of the main musicians to have brought dancehall music into American pop culture, had an interesting perspective on defining dancehall.
Some people look at dancehall as a sound. I don't really look at it as a sound, mm-hmm. because it keeps changing. I look at it as a culture.
Yeah.
You know, because that still resonates. I mean, when you see Beyonce or Rihanna or Drake or Jay-Z or these people come in, they don't necessarily try to take the music so much as them trying to take the culture. Yeah, I mean, the music has evolved over the years into what is a hybrid. It comes from culture.
Mm-hmm.
The style and the feel and the cadences, and it comes from the culture.
One of the distinctive features of many dancehall songs is a chant-like rapping style called toasting. Even if you don't know the term toasting, you know what it is. It's how Shaggy raps in all of his songs, which include Boombastic, Angel, and yes, it wasn't me. Side note, there are a number of musicologists out there who believe that Jamaican toasting laid the foundation for rapping in American hip-hop. If that's the case, big hat tip to Jamaica for helping create what I consider to be one of the world's greatest musical genres. In any case, I asked Shaggy how he got into toasting.
I became a fan of it, you know, so...
Yeah.
And I never really go into dancehall because I wanted to be this big, massive superstar or whatever. I even changed the face of dancehall. I was just a fan of it.
I just
had a knack for coming up with rhymes, and I did it because it got me attention with the girls. Yeah, I talk about their eyes and their lips and their bags and their shoes, and then I'd get the number, and I was like, okay, yep. This is easy, you know? And then you start make record and you start get more girls. And I'm like, okay, all right. So everything was based on women for me back in the early days.
Yeah.
And I understand that, when you hear you toasting in a lot of your songs, sometimes you're doing it in English. Other times you're doing it in patois.
In raw patois. I kind of mix the two.
Yeah.
Right? I'm one of the few that kind of mix the two. So you might have a patois thing, but then I'll do the dancehall melody with the Queen's English mixed up with some patois, and that gives it a better chance of crossing over. So there's a formula.
Yes,
where I'm concerned. Yeah,
I feel like when I listen to your songs, I can kind of feel that you are you'll go into the patois, then come back just enough,
yeah,
so that you're like we're back with you,
so that you understand. Yeah. I mean. It is a strategy that I've always used, and it is, you know, for some has worked brilliantly for me, but it also leads to a lot of criticism from purists, you know, feel like, oh yeah, Shaggy is not authentic and I'm not this, and, you know, and, you know, I've been criticized by critics and purists, so-called purists who have never been to Jamaica. And we're never born in Jamaica. I was born in Jamaica. I have a Jamaican passport. I lived in the ghettos of Kingston, raised in the ghetto of Kingston, Rara.
In patois, like, what would you say if you found something to be like really dope?
Oh, that wicked, you know.
What's that?
Say that wicked, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you say that if it's dope, you say it wicked, bad, you know? Or if you say it's broken English, you know, if you say car, we say kyar.
Yeah, yeah.
You say what happened, we say wapen. What happened?
Oh yeah.
What happened? Yeah, yeah. What happened? You know what I mean? Yeah, so it's, yeah, is you breaking it up.
Yeah.
And if you're being around it some that up enough, you'll be like, you catch it. You probably won't be able to speak it, you know, as fluently as I do, but you certainly understand it.
Shaggy's latest album is called Christmas in the Islands. The whole album is all about celebrating the holidays, Jamaican style.
I wanted to do a Jamaican Christmas because my Christmas that I know is not the same as yours. Or, you know, you don't, we don't dream of a white Christmas. we don't have a white Christmas. My Christmas is sorrel, you know. Sorrel is a plant that they normally scald or dry it, they would say, and create a drink out of it, and you add alcohol to it, and it's a punch, like a rum punch. It would be like a sorrel punch, and you know, that is a Christmas thing. You throw like a pimento seeds in it for the flavor, and you create sorrel. And that every Christmas, because that sorrel plant only grows during the Christmas, it only bears or blooms during the Christmas time in December. So we always have Carl and eggnog, and then it's family food, and you might have the drunk uncle, you know, and that's normally in the settings of your backyard or you're on the beach.
Well, hold on, Shaggy. The drunk uncle is cross-cultural.
Well, it's cross-cultural. Well, yeah, you know. But there's drunk uncle and there's drunk Jamaican uncle. It's two different things.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, you know I mean, so that you know, that come on and them sit down and them have the white rum beside them, and it's food. Christmas is really centered around food. You know, all of your Jamaican dish you might have. We have a brunch at my home where we do all these different Jamaican breakfasts, you know, from rundown to red herring to ackee and sawfish to corn pork and ackee to, you know, callaloo, you know what I mean, to bok choy, to every all these different types of Jamaican breakfast, you know what I mean? And then later on, and then we open presents and then we have a massive dinner.
One track on Christmas in the Islands that caught my ear was a song called Ragamuffin Christmas. I asked Shaggy to talk about the inspiration behind that track.
There's two different Christmases in there. You have the tourist Christmas where you come and you're on the beach and you're probably in a nice cabin or you're in a nice home. But then I also come from two spheres. I've had success in my life now where, you know, I have a lovely home and all the amenities for Christmas, you know. There's a tree, a live tree in my house every year with presents properly gift wrapped, and we do proper present opening. There's eggnog and there is brunch, and you know, my wife makes that there, but in me growing up didn't have that.
Right.
Yeah. So my growing up was much like what I expressed on that particular song with Bounty Killer. Ragamuffin Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Christmas in the garrison, you know what I mean? Where you're talking about Grand Market, you know what I mean? You talk about, you get a present, but it's not necessarily something that is gift wrapped.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, I'm going to give you money, say, I'm going to buy an ice cream or something like that. Or, you know what I mean? That's a different time. And it comes out in a party, like a dance with a sound system. I'm going to buy you some liquor, and that's our Christmas celebration in the hood. Two speaker box outside, and yeah, some liquor is there, and people drinking and eating. And yeah, you know, I mean, that is the ghetto style, you know, garrison style of Christmas.
So ragamuffin means essentially sort of
roughneck, yeah. garrison style, rough Christmas.
Yeah.
Hardcore Christmas.
Yeah. I'm dreaming of a hardcore Christmas.
Yeah, kind of that. You don't dream of it, you reminisce on it.
And this brings me to the classic Counter Jam question. If you were stranded on a deserted island, to be clear, not Jamaica, and you could only eat one Jamaican dish for the rest of your life, what would it be? Here's Shaggy's response.
One Jamaican dish.
That's right.
For the rest of my life.
That's right.
Well, based on my years of how I'm going to live, I would want to eat something. Because some Jamaican dish you can eat while you're young and it becomes harder to eat when you're older. Because you're harder to digest. So if it's one thing I could eat all the way till I'm old, I would have to say ackee and saltfish. Yeah, but because it has the ground provisions, that's a bit healthy. There are many ways of doing it. You know, you can steam it, seeing, and once you boil it, and you just barely, there's ways, different ways and substitutes you can do to make it such an amazing dish always. While the other ones, there's only certain ways you can do it.
Ziggy was on the same wavelength.
One Jamaican dish, ackee and saltfish. What else? What else would I say? There's nothing else to say about that. There's no ackee and saltfish. If I can get a piece of yam with it, even better.
You get a yam. You get a yam. Yeah.
I don't want to answer that, man. There's no other answer. Moss, what else? No, nothing else. That's it. That dish is a great, man. I'm never tired of that.
We're going to listen to one more track from Ziggy Marley. This track was inspired by much of the social upheaval in 2020 triggered by the murder of George Floyd.
And then I remember some old songs from my father. He sang How Many Rivers Do We Have to Cross? And Jimmy Cliff had a song called Many Rivers to Cross. Mm. And, you know, it's just like, I think a good concept would be to say, like, we're done, no more crossing rivers, we're tired of crossing rivers, as a metaphor of we need the changes that we need now. We can't continue crossing rivers to get to a just place, to get to an equal place. Why can't we just set things the right way, you know?
Yeah.
Systematically, within the system itself.
Here's Lift Our Spirits, Raise Our Voice by Ziggy Marley. That's season 3 of Counter Jam, and I'm going on paternity leave, so we'll be back with more in a few months. In the meanwhile, if you like the show, follow and leave a friendly review on Apple Podcasts. Shout out to our guests, Ziggy Marley and Shaggy. Shout out to Ziggy Marley and Bob Marley, wherever you are, for the music and good vibes. Shout out to Food 52, Harry Sultan, and Counter Jam's producer, Coral Lee, who brings more fire than a Scotch bonnet pepper. I'm Peter J. Kim, and I'll catch you on the next episode of Counter Jam.